Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Follow the Money, right after this. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you and about me as we tell them about ourselves. Everything that government, industry, or business knows about you and me is because we told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects us in our person, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect us from ourselves. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. And that's because information is gathered and it's stored in a very reasoned and a very logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's all about knowing how much information or how this information is gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. So always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you have not revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour program, and it's entertaining. It's informational. It's informative. It's educational. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Follow the money. It's an adage that we've all heard. I don't know who thought it up, but Dan Rather on the 6 o'clock news used to use it quite often. Follow the money. In fact, they used to have a little segment on there, you know, let's follow the money, when they were uncovering some governmental graft or corruption. And Tom Brokaw, he used to call it the fleecing of America. That little section on their news program on NBC called the fleecing of America. And they would expose the various scams that government agents and agencies were using to waste taxpayer dollars. And of course, we're all familiar, you know, if you watch the news at all, you're familiar with the waste and the graft and the corruption and the perversion that goes on in our nation's capital, and to a lesser extent in your state capital. It goes on everywhere. The Democratic National Convention, the Republican Convention, you know, when they hold these big conventions, the horrors just descend on these politicians, you know. And the politicians, you know, takes two to tango, and so the politicians are all out here, you know, having sex with the prostitutes and so on. They're drinking and, you know, they're spending your tax dollars when they do this. When they're traveling around the world, you know, on these junkets, they're spending your tax dollars to do that. And it's just a part and parcel with politics. It's a part and parcel with the scene, I guess, as they call it. There's a budget deficit going on here in the United States, and under the Bush administration, it's been pretty hefty. It went back to $200 billion a year, $300, $400, $500 billion a year, and that's what they admit to. Of course, they don't have the Iraq and the Afghan wars on budget. Those are totally off budget, and they're spending, I don't know, God, $3 billion a week, is it? $12, $13, $14 billion a month on those wars over there. Now, those wars are necessary. I'm not suggesting, you know, that they're not serving a good purpose. So we need these wars so that we can pump money into the economy so that we can keep this thing from collapsing. And these wars aren't enough. They're not doing the job, and so we've got to do more than that. And so Ben Bernanke, he's out here, he's printing money. And we call, used to call it M3, it's still called M3, they just don't report on it anymore. That's the money in circulation, and of course they just print more of it. Or they just issue, you know, electronic digits, and then they loan those out to banks and one thing and another. And then they're trying to keep the lid on the pot, you know, to keep it from boiling over. And then that's why I said I think we ought to follow some of this money around and let's see where this money's going, and whether or not we want to participate in it. Now, George Bush the other day, he was on TV, and he was announcing his $150 billion stimulus package. Stimulus? There's something wrong with the economy, and they need to stimulate it a little bit. The wars won't stimulate it enough. The deficit spending, that's not stimulating it enough. And Bernanke and printing more money, and at the rate of about, I think it's 15%. They're increasing the money supply by 15% a year this year, 2008. That's not enough. And so the president said, well, what we got to have here is a stimulus package. We're going to spend $150 billion. We're going to send this money out to you directly. We're just going to send you $600. I got to thinking about that, and I said, you know, if the government has all this money, so much money that they just don't know what to do with it all, that they just got to send us all a check for $600. Why don't they just send us all a check for $1 million? Can you grasp that one? I mean, if the government wants to stimulate the economy, and if sending you $600 is going to do that job, then right away I said, well, wouldn't $1,200 do it twice as good? I mean, why stop at $150 billion? Why not send out $300 billion? Then I got to thinking about it some more, and I said, well, if $300 billion would be twice as good as $150 billion, then why not send out double that? Now, let's just keep doubling that. And I figured a good round number would be about $1 million. So why doesn't our government do this? Just write up the checks, total $1 million each, and just send out $1 million to everybody in America. There'd be 300 million people in the country. Just send them all, 300 million people, $1 million each. Now, that'll eliminate poverty. You know, this guy Edwards, John Edwards, he's running for president. He's real concerned about you people being poverty stricken. See, that would end poverty, wouldn't it? And everybody that has $1 million, you know, would go out into the marketplace and start spending it. I mean, you know, why dink around here with $600 when we could have $1 million in everybody's pocket? I mean, talk about stimulating the economy. If you think $600 is going to stimulate the economy, my God, could you imagine what $1 million in your pocket is going to do for stimulating the economy? Now, I know I can just see it right now. You people out there shaking your heads like, this poor guy's totally out of touch with reality. Well, let's back it down a little bit. If $1 million is too much, well, then how much is enough? How much is enough for the stimulus? Where does the government get this money that they're going to send to all of us in a stimulus package? Is the United States government sitting on a gold mine someplace that they just reach down into the ground and pull gold nuggets out and meld them down into gold coins and then print up money and pass that out? Does the government have some kind of a pipeline out here somewhere to an inexhaustible income stream? Because the president the other day, he said the American economy is fundamentally sound. The president said on more than one occasion that the American economy is strong. So he uses words like strong and sound. Excuse me. If the economy is strong and if the economy is sound, then why do we need a stimulus package? If the economy is strong and if the economy is sound, then why do we need to increase the money supply by 15% a year? If this economy is so strong and it's so sound, why do we need these two wars? What's that all about? Now, there was a time in America when we didn't need war, and we didn't need a stimulus package, and we didn't need a Federal Reserve, we didn't need an M3. It was a period of time from 1865, right after the Civil War ended. You know, we needed to go to work and rebuild the damage. And from 1865 to 1900 was the biggest building boom. It was the biggest economic expansion in our history. 35 years of peace. 35 years with no Federal Reserve. 35 years with no stimulus package. 35 years with no deficit spending. And we built 286,000 miles of railroad. We built steel mills. We built cities. And we went out and we conquered the West. And we built America. We built a machine over here that produced a standard of living and a way of life that was unique. It was the envy of the world. Did it in 35 years. Well, it took a little longer than that, and it lasted longer than 35 years and started before 1865. But it was that particular 35 years that saw the greatest growth and no inflation. There was zero inflation. There was a 2% deflation. That is, that in that period of time, your money never lost value. When you went to the store to buy a dozen eggs in 1870, or 1880 or 1890, the price of eggs was always the same. In fact, they went down by 2% over that 35 years. If you put $100 in the bank in 1865 and 1900, you had $102 worth of purchasing power in there. Now, I don't know if that's called the Golden Age or that's the Gilded Age or what it was, but, you know, it was something different. And if not better than, it was certainly something different. Didn't need the president running around saying that the American economy is fundamentally strong or the economy is sound. Now, every night on the news, we hear about housing and how much your house is losing value and how you can't borrow money to buy a house and then how houses are overpriced and there's a housing bubble. What the hell is that all about? There wasn't any housing bubble in the 35 years from 1865 to 1900. And we didn't have a Federal Reserve. We didn't have M1, M2, and M3. We did, you know, people had gold and silver coins in their pockets put out by the Treasury. Things were a little different. I'm not suggesting that we go back to that. I mean, after all, it obviously was a bad period of time. Or we would have continued it. We stopped doing that. So you got to ask, well, why? And the answer is you need to follow the money. Because when you follow the money, you find out that deficit spending makes money for somebody. I don't know if it makes any money for you or makes any money for me, but somebody must be making money off of these federal budget deficits every year, or we wouldn't have them. Somebody must be making money off of the housing bubble, or we wouldn't have a housing bubble. You know, there has to be a cause for every effect. You don't have, you know, sound economies or weak economies or stimulus packages for no good reason. There has to be a reason for the stimulus package. So if the economy is strong and sound, then I don't see any reason why we would need a stimulus package. Now, if the economy is sick and weak, then I can see the logic behind that. If the housing bubble has burst, And if the economy as a result of that is sick and weak, then maybe we need some kind of strong medicine to add some strength to the economy. But I listened to my president, and I want to believe the guy, but, you know, the guy lies so much, so often, you know, for no good reason. You know, when you come around to me and you're talking about SIVs and ABAs and CDOs, and you talk about banks running over here to Abu Dhabi and the United Arab Emirates, and they're borrowing money, $11 billion, Citibank did the other day, or Citigroup, because they're having these write-downs caused by the toxic sludge, as it's being called by economists, called the CDOs and the housing implosion. It says to me that the solvency of Citigroup isn't very good. And if Citigroup, the biggest bank in the country, if that's not so good, and you take a look at the write-downs that are coming on Bank of America and Wachovia and J.P. Morgan and Bear Stearns and Goldman Sachs, you know, and just listening to the news, just listening to Katie and Brian, you know, and Charlie, they just keep telling me all these neat things about all the good things that are going on out here in the economy. The president tells me that the economy is strong and sound. My God, makes me want to go out and buy stocks, doesn't it? So all I'm doing is just a newspaper reporter. You know, as if I was working for the paper. Now I'm kind of independent, not with the paper anymore. But I'm just a reporter telling you that this is where we're at today. This is what you're listening to on the news and what I'm listening to on the news. So I thought, let's take a look at follow the money, because there's got to be a cause and effect relationship. And the other day, I got my money changer in. The money changer is a monthly paper that comes out, printed by a fellow, or put out by a fellow named Franklin Sanders. And this guy Sanders, you know, he has an uncanny knack every once in a while. I didn't do it every month, but every once in a while. He has just this uncanny knack of putting the story into perspective so that you can grasp it. And so he wrote a piece here called Follow the Money. And I thought I'd share it with you. It's fairly short and to the point. And I think it kind of tells us, you know, why it is that we have a housing bubble, why it is that we have why we have CDOs, and why we have a budget deficit and wars going on. It's because there's money to be made. I don't know if you're making money off of the war in Iran or Iraq. Iran's coming, but, you know, Iraq. But I'm not. I'm not making any money off of that war, and so I'm not 100% behind the president in that war over there. I'm not getting anything out of Afghanistan. I don't have any drug interests over there. I don't have any oil interests in Iraq. Now, if I was ExxonMobil or BP Petroleum, you know, I'd probably be behind that war 100%, maybe 1,000%, as old George McGovern said, because there's money to be made off of it. And I don't doubt that, and I don't deny it. You know, I'm not opposed to people making money, and I'm just opposed to them making money at my expense. And I don't mind you going out there and working hard and making a bunch, but, you know, if you're going to work a little bit and then take it away from me, that disturbs me a great deal. Well, anyway, Franklin Sanders, the money changer, he says, recently I read an interview in Acres, USA, with Dr. Michael Hudson. He's the president of the Institute for the Study of Long-Term Economic Trends. He's a distinguished economist. His comments about the U.S. balance of payments deficit were astute, but it seemed to me that he missed the point, as so many others miss the point. They miss something, something big. They look at events as though they were accidents, and they ignore what we all know, and that is, things happen because somebody makes them happen. Things happen because somebody makes them happen. The war in Iraq happened, and George Bush and the Republicans worked hard to make that war happen. Now, you know, we had this housing bubble, and somebody somewhere along the line made that housing bubble happen. We have these commercial debt obligations. Somebody had to work hard to make those commercial debt obligations, called CDOs, and then these structured investment vehicles, those are SIVs, somebody had to go out there and work hard to make those and then go out and sell them. They didn't just happen naturally. They didn't just grow on a tree someplace. Somebody had to go out there and make that happen. And so a question arises, well, who made it happen and why? How did that benefit you and me? Does it benefit plumbers, carpenters, and electricians, or does it benefit bankers and speculators and stockbrokers? And God love them, you know, I'm not opposed to speculators, stockbrokers. Those people all have lawns to mow and mortgages to pay, just like all the rest of us. But are they living off of us? Are they making their livings off of my labor and off of my sweat? Because if they are, then maybe I ought to get a little more excited about it. If they're just out here in the marketplace buying, selling, and trading, and working, and doing their thing, and just doing what comes naturally, you know, then that's what I do, and that's what everybody does, and you try to make a buck and pay your bills. But this guy Franklin Sanders says things happen because somebody makes them happen. So who's making this recession happen? Who's bringing this great depression that's coming down on the world happen? How did that get going? And who's going to profit off of that? Well, Dr. Hudson struggles with why the Europeans and Chinese would put up with the U.S. balance of payments deficits, which essentially trades worthless U.S. dollars for real goods. Seems to make work against their national interests. Doesn't seem to make any sense. Or does it? Years ago, when I was writing for Larry Abraham, he taught me one rule for every riddle. He said, follow the money. So look at these apparently senseless policies and then ask the question, whom do they benefit? Do they benefit the American people? Do they benefit the United States government? Or does it benefit somebody else? Who's benefiting from these events that we read about and hear about on the 6 o'clock news? So, to get a handle on this, let's go back to Bretton Woods. Bretton Woods. The beginning of an answer goes back to the Bretton Woods monetary arrangement that set up the present international monetary system. And as silly as it sounds, it built in an inequity that seems to have passed totally unnoticed by most economists. I would never have figured it out on my own without reading two articles by one J.N. Tlaga, spelled T-L-A-G-A, Tlaga, a man I've never been able to contact. The articles that we have been had, parts one and two, that is, we have been had, is the title of the article, two of them, written by J.N. Tlaga, Parts 1 and 2. It appeared on goldeagle.com in 1997. So, if you wanted to read the article, you would go to www.gold-eagle.com. Editorials. Tlaga. T-L-A-G-A. So, without digging into the rather technical details of Tlaga's exposition, let me sum it all up by quoting his main point. He said, by making the United States dollar convertible to gold internationally, but not domestically, Bretton Woods set up a disparity between 100-cent Roosevelt-era dollars and 75-cent greenback that was automatically pricing everything foreign product or every foreign product one-fourth cheaper in America. And every American product, one-third more expensive abroad. Domestically, the United States dollar continued to depreciate, while foreigners could still exchange those dollars for 100 gold cents on the dollar. Americans couldn't, but foreigners could. So foreign governments, which were deriving outlandish trade benefits from the overvalued dollar, were actually required under an agreement signed and ratified by the United States government to keep dollar continuously overvalued by pegging their currencies to the dollar's outdated par value. The initial edge of one-third hidden tariff on U.S. exports and a one-fourth hidden subsidy to foreign imports provided enough infrastructure for quick economic miracles. So at the end of World War II, the United States enjoyed far and away the world's biggest and most stable economy, less than 10% of which depended on exports. Japan and Germany are our erstwhile enemies, destined to become our allies and toughest competitors, had been bombed into insignificance. England and Europe were economic pygmies compared to America. U.S. gold reserves stood at 705 million ounces in 1949. By 1973, this reserve had dwindled to 267 million ounces, less than half. Now, stupid as it may sound, our own government imposed a war indemnity upon all Americans. Bretton Woods condemned every domestic American enterprise except finance, that is banking, to hopeless uncompetitiveness. But as Forrest Gump would say, stupid is as stupid does. Could the policymakers, could the economists who set up this Bretton Woods agreement have not understood what they were doing? Could they have missed that Bretton Woods would inevitably deindustrialize, decapitalize the United States, and inevitably lower the American standard of living? Was that all just an accident, an oversight? Was it a big mistake? Now, the only answer is impossible. But if that's so, then why would they do it? Who benefited from the Bretton Woods Agreement? What was the purpose behind it? Well, Tlag offers us an answer. He said, the outflow of dollars would be further exacerbated by massive export of capital by multinational corporations, which could add on one-third or more to their capital by moving it abroad. And then they could collect one-fourth more in price subsidy by importing the products of their expatriated plants back to the United States, with still more profit from lower wages paid to foreign workers and from borrowings denominated in quicker deteriorating currencies, piling up on top. There's the answer right there, in that paragraph. Right there is the answer. So let me give you your reminder. We'll come back and I'll tell you the answer and why it is that we're outsourcing our jobs to India and China, and why Bretton Woods was designed and why it has been implemented and why it works so wonderfully to impoverish you when we come back. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on the website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions now of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about follow the money. Now, I picked this up because the president the other day said that the economy is fundamentally sound. Fundamentally sound. He said the economy is strong. So the economy, according to our president, is strong and sound, but he's handing out $150 billion in subsidies. He's gonna send you a check for $600. I thought I saw that the other day. I'm not gonna get $600, and if I did, I'd send it back. I don't need it. Don't want it. It's bad for me. It's a bribe. I wouldn't take it under any circumstances. But Americans are gonna get their check for $600, and they're gonna go out and spend it. And this is going to make them feel real good and want to vote Republican. I'm not quite sure whether I want to vote, but I just thought I'd point that out to you. So I happened to pick up the Money Changer. I got to tell you where you can get a copy of the Money Changer here, because Franklin Sanders, I don't know if Frank is, I don't know if he's an economist or not. Maybe he is. If he's an economist, then he's a pretty smart guy. And if he isn't an economist, he's still pretty smart. It's just that when you're an economist, you know, you got this letter you can hang on. And I don't think old Frank puts any letters. I don't think he's got any heirs. I imagine he's probably been to college, but he keeps that hidden as well as anybody I've ever met. I wouldn't accuse him of going to college, he probably did. But, I mean, he's not hanging. You know, I don't see Franklin Sanders, Ph.D. I don't see Franklin Sanders, M.D., C.A., P.D.X., or anything like that on there. And this Money Changer, you can get a copy of it if you'd call him and ask him for it. I think he'd probably send you one, because he'd like to sell you a subscription to his paper. Now, he doesn't pay me to promote his paper, but I subscribe to three. Sanders is one of them. And the International Forecaster is two, and then I don't subscribe to, but I receive the Privateer. Now, the Privateer, I think, is probably the best all-around educational tool. And then I think the International Forecaster is probably the best overall informational tool. I mean, it's the, if you're looking for education, you get the privateer. If you're looking for just raw data and information that'll put you into overload, it's the International Forecaster. Now, if you want to understand how this is put together, you get the Money Changer. And this guy, I'm telling you, this paragraph, I'm going to go back over it over here, tells you why the multinational corporations are offshoring their jobs and their operations to China. It was built in 1944. Now Sanders comes up and he says, this isn't an accident. It ain't an accident. So get this guy's phone number down. Get your pencil out here and sharpen it up a little bit. You want to call 888-218-9226. Now again, that's toll free, 888-218-9226. Now that's the Money Changer, and the guy's name is Franklin Sanders. Now he's got another number here. It's 931, probably ain't toll free, but it's 931, so zip code on that number, and it's 766-6066. So it's 766-6066, and the zip code or the prefix is 931. So you got two telephone numbers. Now, Franklin Sanders, Money Changers at Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, and the zip code is 38486. Now that's Franklin Sanders. The paper is called The Money Changer. They're at Post Office Box 178 in West Point, Tennessee. And the zip code is 38486. Now, this guy has great understanding. Now, I'm just a dummy, crummy plumber. But, you know, I kind of like to understand why it is that people do what they do. So I take a look at it, and the president says that the economy is fundamentally sound and strong. He has to say that. We're all of us characters in a horror movie called The Great Depression of the 21st Century. The world is on the verge of another 1930s Great Depression. And the president, in order to stave off panic, is telling us, be calm, everybody. The economy is fundamentally strong and sound. And so all we have to fear is fear itself. Just sit back and relax, and everything's under control. That's what they were telling them on the Titanic after it hit the iceberg. Now, just go back to your staterooms and just sit back and relax. Everything's fine. Well, everything isn't fine. That's number one. Everything isn't fine, and we all know that. I mean, you got to be brain dead to believe that the American economy is fundamentally sound and strong. I mean, you got to have your head so deep up your rectal region that you'll never see daylight for the rest of time. Now, that being said, we need to understand why it's that way. Who did this, and what was their motivation? Somebody had to be profiting off of this outsourcing of our jobs. That didn't happen accidentally. You know, IBM isn't closing down plants, and Whirlpool isn't closing down factories and opening these factories in Mexico and Indonesia and the Philippines for no good reason. You know, somebody's thought this out. Somebody's making this thing work this way. Now, if you think you're going to vote in Barack Obama or somebody going to fix this problem over here, that's overly simplistic. You know, we've had a lot of presidents. We've had a lot of politicians come into office since 1944. This outsourcing program, this deindustrialization of America, started in 1944, before World War II ended. Somebody had a plan. Somebody executed the plan. And here we are, 60, 70 years later, and now the plan is coming to fruition. Now, a fellow by the name of Talaga, T-L-A-G-A, offers us the answer. He says, the outflow of dollars would be further exacerbated by the massive export of capital by multinational corporations, which could add on one-third or more to their capital by moving it abroad. So when Whirlpool moves their manufacturing plant from Fayetteville, Arkansas, to Juarez, Mexico, they're actually adding one-third to their capital because of the Bretton Woods Agreement. And then they collect one-fourth or more in price subsidy by importing that washing machine from Juarez, Mexico, into the United States and selling it here. It's built into the system. Now, boys and girls, most Americans are Christians. And I never met a Christian that could count. And I never met a Jew that couldn't. And there has been this great disparity between Christians and Jews, and that is the Jews can count and the Christians can't. And because of that, going back, you know, for at least 2,000 years, there has been an animosity between Christians and Jews over the fact that the Jews have preeminence over the Christians in monetary affairs. That's why all the Jews are bankers. That's why all the Jews are businessmen. And that's why you Christians all work for the Jews in their factories and in their banks and in their monetary institutions. That's why they dominate, and that's why they're the head and you're the tail. And you don't like it, and you get mad as hell. And I'm just an observer sitting here on the side saying, you know, Christians could learn how to count, you know, if they put their minds to it. You don't have to be dominated by somebody else. You don't have to be taken advantage of. But, you know, you got to wake up someday and say, hey, wait a minute, I'm not going to do that. And probably the best source of information that we ever could have gotten on economics was from the Bible. You know, there are about 15 economic laws that we have to follow in the Bible. And we Americans do not follow those economic principles from the Scripture. And instead, we have followed after the Federal Reserve and the banks and the politicians and the preachers. And they have an agenda. And their agenda is to put you to work for them. And, you know, you've got a job and you're working here at Whirlpool. Or you've got a job and you're working for Bank of America. But you need to understand, boys and girls, that you're working for the man. And if you're employed and you want to work for the man, that's fine. But there's no money in employment. And your Creator had a better plan than that. He gave you the land, and all wealth comes out of the ground. All wealth comes out of the land. And we Americans said, to hell with that. We're leaving the farm, and we're going to Pittsburgh to work in the steel mill. We're going to Detroit to work for Henry Ford. Now, you know, it's a choice that we all had to make, and we all made that choice, and our president tells us that what Americans want are jobs, jobs, jobs. And I imagine that's what you people want, are jobs, 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 and if that's it, get after it. I'm not here to tell you that you shouldn't have a job. But I'm here to tell you that you're being exploited. And if you want to be exploited, then you need a job. To be exploited, you need employment. Now, if that's the bottom line, then get after it. Now, here's a guy by the name of Kalaga, and here's the fellow that's exposing it. His name is Franklin Sanders. He says, let me explain this to you. Under the Bretton Woods Agreement, there was a built-in economic system put into place in 1944 that had a built-in one-third profit margin or benefit if you will move your business from America to China. And if you will import those goods from China to the United States, we'll fatten it up by another 25%. Built in. Now, that was built in by somebody. Somebody put that Bretton Woods Agreement into operation. Now, you might not have understood it, and maybe the Congress in 1944 didn't understand it, and maybe the President didn't understand it. I don't know who did or who didn't understand it. But by 1997, this fellow Talaga, T-L-A-G-A, understood it and wrote about it. And Franklin Sanders picked up on it, and he said, let me explain it to you. That's why I suggest that you get a copy that, or that you subscribe to the Money Changer. Now, I give these recommendations. People don't listen. if you want to have understanding, there's a proverb. It's in Proverbs chapter 1. And your Creator tells you if you want to have wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, then you want to pay attention to these proverbs. The book of understanding, the best book of wisdom is the book of Proverbs. Never met anybody that had anything better to say than the book of Proverbs. And so as a result of that, I apply those proverbs and I say, there's safety in a multitude of counsel. And so I have three newsletters that I go to get counsel. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't 1,000 of them out there. And if you're subscribing to McIlvaney, stick with him. Don's a hell of a good guy. And he's got a great newsletter. And I'm not suggesting that it's any poorer than anybody else. I happen to get these three, and I suggest that you pay attention to them so that you Christians can learn how to count. Because until you learn how to count, you're going to be taken advantage of. That is, your president's going to take advantage of you. Your Congress is going to take advantage. Your employer is going to take advantage. And as long as you're happy with it, well, then there's no problem. But sometimes, we become disenchanted. So when Dr. Hudson, now here's this is the article that was written in Up in Acres, and Dr. Hudson says America has always put its own interests above those of foreign interests, he's just wrong. The interests of American workers and farmers and manufacturers certainly have not been served by the American government or the American government's policies, including its financial warfare against developing economies through these Bretton Woods-spawned institutions. The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, along with these monetary institutions, are the problem. But these policies certainly have served the interests of the multinational corporations and the financiers and served them well to this day. And that's why we have been had. It's an old adage, we've been had. And this has been going on since 1944, and it's still going on today, and it's going to continue on. Now, there's a black spot on the horizon here, and that is, well, it ultimately comes to an end. It comes to an end when the Ponzi scheme reaches critical mass. And that's where we are today. The Ponzi scheme has now reached critical mass, and it's going to fall apart. It's not going to harm the moneyed interests because they've already taken the paper money and converted it to gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil. They have converted into the manufacturing plants and the hard goods and the real estate and the land. Take a look at old Turner, Turner Broadcasting, Ted Turner. He's the largest, I heard this, I think he's the largest landowner in America. Or maybe it's the second largest. He's right up there. In other words, Ted Turner, what he did was he took his money and he turned it into real estate, turned it into land. He's sitting there with the land, and you out there, boys and girls, living in the cities, working for the man, have the commercial paper. You have your 401ks and your Kroger plans and your retirement dreams. And you have your retirement packages, that are all invested in the stock market and commercial paper and CDOs and toxic sludge and SIVs. And when the whole thing implodes, you take it in the shorts and Ted Turner takes it in land. And then there's a guy by the name of George Soros. And Soros was quoted the other day, said, "The American dollar is history. It's going down the tubes." He says, "Get out of the American dollar." Now, you see, for the average plumber, carpenter, and electrician who owns a home and is making a mortgage payment and making car payments, hell, he's buried in the American dollar. There isn't any hope for him. He's dead. He's standing up. But he's comatose. He's dead. He can breathe. But we're holding him up. Now the same thing is true of international dollar holders, the people that are holding all of this toxic sludge in France and Germany and China. There's people all over the world that are holding American bonds and American dollars and so on. Those people are all dead on arrival. The guys like George Soros and Warren Buffett and Ted Turner and the bankers and the people that are on the inside know that this is coming. In fact, they knew it was coming. See, it's already in play. So it isn't something that I'm reporting is coming in the future, and I'm playing prophet. I'm just playing newscaster. I'm telling you, the world's economy is imploding. The American economy is not strong. It is weak. And it's not healthy. It is sick. And it's about to implode. Implode. That means it's about to disintegrate around our ears. Now, there's a little more to the story. Now, the closing of the gold window on the 15th of August, 1971, didn't change anything. Contrary to persistently maintained spin, the Bretton Woods system was not abolished on the 15th of August, 1971. Closing the gold window merely replaced monetary gold with our own government's IOUs, according to Tlaga. So after the gold window closed, but why would foreign governments continue stupidly to accept U.S. government IOUs, and Dr. Hudson complains? Thus, the balance of payments deficit turned out to be the means of financing the government's federal budget deficit. This gave America a free ride and enabled America to make war with other countries. Savings, instead of giving up its own gold reserves or ownership of companies and resources. Foreign countries had a narrow choice. Either their central banks would accept the excess dollars and recycle them back into U.S. Treasury bonds, or they wouldn't buy these dollars. They would let them be sold on the market, and their currency would appreciate against the dollar. This would have raised the price of their exports to foreign countries, causing unemployment in their export industries. That's precisely why they put up with U.S. payment deficits, and why they won't ever do anything about the shrinking U.S. dollar. Those governments profit from the shrinking U.S. dollar. Now, if people keep on doing something apparently stupid, they may really be stupid. But then again, maybe they're operating from reasons that we haven't caught on to yet. And the same flow of dollars from export trade, which comes back into the United States in the form of bonds, keeps the economies of these export-dependent countries like China and Japan humming. If you stop those exports and their economy stops, then, too, that would also stop the profits flowing to the multinational corporations who own large chunks of those foreign economies and the banks that finance them. Perhaps these policies aren't so stupid after all. You know, after all, if you're the one profiting from them, and if you have a government in your hip pocket, so when it's seen from this perspective, this so-called free markets and globalization that destroy national and local economies and privatization, that transfers essential public assets into private hands at bargain basement prices, these people aren't stupid. They're corrupt. That's true. They're dishonest. They're unethical. They're wicked. They're evil. But they are very sensible. And it is all very profitable to somebody. So we're involved in perpetual debt for perpetual profit. The mistake that we all make is thinking that these debts have to be paid at the last. True enough, for you and I, they have to be paid. But it's not at all true for nations who have a printing press at their disposal. It isn't true either for people who profit from the interest on those debts as long as they last, or the production financed by these balance of payments deficits, or the bankers who create these loans out of thin air. In fact, it's not even true for you and me. As long as we can borrow a little bit more to pay the interest and then mortgage our children's future a little further into the future, as long as the system keeps lumbering along, ballooning profits for the owners, drawing more and more people and nations into debt slavery and corporate serfdom, it can go on forever. Thank you very much. And none of this is done by accident. It pays somebody, and that somebody keeps the system rolling. Just follow the money. Now remember that this article is in the current Money Changer. This is the January 2008 Money Changer. And the Money Changer comes from Franklin Sanders, S-A-N-D-E-R-S. And I've got two telephone numbers here. I'll give them both to you. The one is toll-free, 888-218-9226. I don't know what the price of this paper is. I doubt if it's $100 a year. Just ask, you know, what's the price of it? It's worth 10 times that. I mean, if you're paying $500 a year for the Money Changer, it's worth it. He puts out a book here on arbitrage. I've reported on that a time or two. This guy will make you more money than this subscription's chicken feed. He'll make you 10, 20, 50, 100 times more. Just follow along and pay attention. And this guy's a moneymaker. The number again, 888-218-9226. Now he's got a second number here. It's 931-766-6066. Again, that's area code 931-766-6066. I don't know if this guy uses a computer. I think he's kind of like I am. I don't use a computer at all. Now, I've got a computer operation here and a computer operator. But I never see him put in his Money Changer email or anything like that. So I think you're going to have to send him a letter to Post Office Box 178 in West Point, Tennessee. And that's the Money Changer, Post Office Box 178 in West Point, Tennessee. No, that's not West Point, New York. That's West Point, Tennessee. The guy's name is Franklin Sanders, and the paper is the Money Changer. And about every so often, old Franklin, he comes up with one of these little gems, one of these little, you know, proverbs, and says, "Oh God, let me explain this to you." See, until I read this, as old as I am, I never understood Bretton Woods. Not until I read this article here called Fall of the Money. Oh, now I got it down pat. Hey, I got it down cold. I understand why Walmart is bringing in all this stuff from overseas, because they make one-third more by bringing it in from overseas and 25% profit for selling it here. Oh, now I can readily understand why Whirlpool moved their operation from Arkansas to Mexico. It's because their capital is one-third more advantageous in Mexico, and their profit 25% greater. See, they're paying their laborers down there in pesos, and they're collecting their profit in dollars. Now, that's a Ponzi scheme. It comes to an end, and we're in the process of the end right now. But for your information, it came from the Money Changer, and the guy's name is Franklin Sanders. Don't forget to get a copy of it. It's the January 2008 Money Changer. And that'll tell you that story. Hey, we're about out of time, so let me give you a final reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement only. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal that says our time's up. We got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.